What is the first line of that song? No one knows for certain. No one knows for certain. That's a good place to start with this topic of what happens when you die. And all of us want to know. I think a lot of us want to know about things rather than having or preparing the experience itself for the experience itself. And there are a lot of answers that have been given over the last many, many thousands of years, maybe tens of thousands of years, about the mystery of where do you go? Where does one go when one is no longer in the body? How can you be there in fullness one moment and then be gone to where? If you go, where have you gone? It's a very reasonable question for all of us. And yet we don't know. And we're not satisfied with that. All the religions have come up with different ideas about it. And all the ideas, you know, really are coping mechanisms. That's how I prefer to look at the different traditions, rituals, theories, and ideas about the hereafter. But no one knows. Two weeks ago, there was an article in the New York Times, a review of an art exhibition at what is usually an Asian art museum. And very indelicately, the name of the exhibition is Remember, You Will Die. All righty then. A lot of artwork in this particular exhibition at this museum. And I'm going to read one tiny paragraph from this review of the exhibition. Talks about East and West meaning East is the Orient, West is the Occident, that's us. And when it refers to artwork, it's generally from the Buddhist tradition of the East and from the Christian tradition in the West. But the critic says, with the West on one side of the gallery and the East on the other side, it is apparent that the Europeans tend towards a more naturalistic, gloomy, and macabre approach, while the Tibetan Buddhist works tend to be more cartoonish, symbolically complicated, and hopeful. Western works are morbidly preoccupied with the perishability of the body. Eastern works take on a holistic Buddhist view of death as a passage between states of being in a nearly endless cycle of reincarnation. And that is big difference, and that's only between two cultural traditions, but the great divide is there. You know, if you're looking at the East or you're looking at the West, you know, and there's that in you that wants to know for sure who's right. For sure who's right. And nobody knows. Who's right? Is it even an appropriate question to ask who's right or wrong? We don't know. Deepak Chopra, bless his heart, who's written books about everything except car inspection and real estate, as far as I know, wrote a pretty terrific book, which I read a while ago. I know some of you, I think Claire, you were in the group that was looking at this book, Life After Death. It's quite good. He, being Indian, writes most of the book from the Hindu tradition, which is yet a third way of being with its own imagery and and mythology, but he also was an MD and talks about a variety of experiences that are common to most people at this point. He has a sub-chapter here called Crossing Over, How the Afterlife Dawns. And I'm going to read this. It's very brief as well. But this is a type of thing that we hear about quite commonly now. And it's generally called the near-death experience. In the medical world, they actually call it NDE, near-death experience. And it goes, number one, the physical body stops functioning. The dying person may not be aware of this, but eventually knows that it has occurred, like in the movie Ghost. Who remembers the movie Ghost? With, of course. Okay, we remember that kind of dynamic of not knowing that it has happened. Two, the physical world vanishes. This can happen by degrees. There can be a sense of floating upward or looking down on familiar places as they recede. Three, the dying person feels lighter, suddenly freed of limitation. Four, the mind and sometimes senses continue to operate. Gradually, however, what is perceived becomes non-physical. Five, a presence grows that is felt to be divine. This presence can be clothed in a light or in a body of angels or gods. It can communicate to the dying person. Six, personality and memory begin to fade, but the sense of I remains. Or we would say I am. Same difference. The sense of I remains. This I has an overwhelming sense of moving on to another phase of existence. This is a very common experience, he says in this book. About 5% of the population in the States has had such an experience. And things of this nature are written about in other cultures from many centuries ago as well. So this seems to be, this near-death experience seems to be a fairly common thing. And is it the way it happens? Might could be. Still doesn't talk about what happens next. Yeah, but then what? Then what happens? And we all really want to know. It's like, okay, it's like getting on the airplane. And once you get on the airplane, that's good. I get that part. But then what happens? Nobody knows. We talk all the time in our practice of metaphysics that you will have an experience of the world as you expect it to be. The ideas and images and expectations that you impress into divine mind will kind of come back to you as a real life experience. Okay, that happens in our living world right here. Would it be reasonable to assume that that happens on the other side? Yeah, because it's all part of the same metaphysics. So, if you have a lively expectation that you will be met at the pearly gates by St. Peter, then you probably will. And I don't remember what we were supposed to expect. I know that we were going to be seated at the right hand of God. I don't know on what kind of chair necessarily. But if you got through purgatory, how did I forget about purgatory? Good Lord. But sister, how long are you going to be in purgatory? For millions of years, children. Millions of years. What's the point of being good? But I digress. If you have that expectation, if you are of a Tibetan Buddhist notion, will you be welcomed by bodhisattvas, or in the Tibetan, you enter the bardo, and you probably will. I think actually that is the current teaching of the Dalai Lama about the afterlife. Whatever it is you are expecting to have, it will happen. And yet there also has to be a further unfolding beyond all these descriptors. Because if you are forever unfolding as a presence of love, it is unlimited and unbound by any mere mortal images of angels or saints or rishis or sadhus. So there's probably some greater ongoing. And there's a part of us that goes, okay, that's good. But I really want to know what happens. You remember the show Bewitched? How many remember Bewitched? Fondly. Boy, they don't make TV like that anymore. So for those of you who are too young to know the glory of the show that was Bewitched, there was a nosy neighbor named Gladys Kravitz. Do we remember Gladys Kravitz? And her long-suffering husband, Abner. And Gladys Kravitz was always looking from behind the curtain, going, Abner, what's going on over in that house? I want to know what's going on over there, and you won't believe what's happening, Abner. And Abner was always the type of a husband who had glasses like this, and he would go, what? Do I care? What? A long, bored, what? Well, you know, that's us. There's a part of us that's like Gladys Kravitz. I want to know what happens in the afterlife, and that's why I need to have a good coffin, and I need to have all the thing taken care of, or if you're an ancient Egyptian, I got to be mummified the right way, and I got to make sure I take all the cats with me, because this all stuff is happening. Or not. And then you get to be like Abner and go, okay, you can obsess about that all you want, but what does it have to do with anything that's happening in our house? What does it have to do with anything that's happening here? And the answer is really nothing. If we really were supposed to know, we would, and we don't. So I take it that the divine intelligence, which has held the cosmos together for 13.5 billion years in perfect divine order, knows that you will learn what you need to know by and by, and focus on what's happening here. This is the point. The great poet Mary Oliver has one line which says, what will you do with this one wild and precious life you've been given? What will you do with this one wild and precious life you've been given? The subtext being, forget about every other preoccupation of every kind. Forget about what happens next. Forget about all the anxiety and the Mrs. Kravitz attachment to having to have everything the way I need it to be. And continue to ask yourself, as a meditation, what will you do with this one wild and precious life you've been given? Because you won't be able to make choices forever. And I think it's time that all of us, if we're not there, begin the inquiry. And to step up, step into full power of what is it that you really want to do with the rest of your life. If you're 12 or 112. Whatever it is you can do today or tomorrow or begin that may have long-term consequences, whether they play out or not is immaterial. But what is it you would do? I think this is a sophisticated and important approach to the whole idea of dying. If you have been uncomfortable with the notion and don't want to go there and aren't going to talk about it and think that denial is an effective way of handling it, it's not really. There's another line of poetry, I will not go gentle into that good night. Kicking and screaming is so ineffective and so unattractive. It is not the way any of us want to go. You want to go with vigor and know that you've been used for a mighty purpose because you chose it. and that you go without regrets. And if you need to begin the conversation, if you've been shy or afraid of having conversation about how do I plan for this or how do I prepare for this or what is it that I really think is important and is going to happen, then start having the conversation right now. Because you want to have those conversations now, not in a crisis time. Like good psychotherapy, you know, the best time to start is when things are okay, not when you're in a crisis, because the best you can do is just hump your way through the crisis. This is a great time to think about what is it that I really believe about it, and am I carrying some antique notion from a juvenile experience, or what do I think now, and am I at peace with that, and have I made my plans? As we know, there is great joy and power to be claimed when you are prepared for your transition. Great joy and great power. What I so appreciate about our culture is that we are folk who are living beyond the need for dogma. And this is not to say that if you require dogma in your life, that you are a child of a lesser God. Soul consciousness has needs at many levels that must be satisfied, and yet we are different than most people. And our soul requires that we live beyond dogma, that we are part of this way of reasoned inquiry, and that we want to have the conversation. We want to have ideas and explorations that are right for us. And we live beyond dogma. At 9 o'clock, I was saying, I wonder what the opposite of dogma is. And Doris Vintage, great teacher that she is, said, for me, the opposite of dogma is curiosity. And I went, brilliant. Thank you, teacher. That is the right answer. That we choose to live, fully embrace a world of curiosity, which is not mere ambivalence of, I don't care, but I don't know. And what do I want to know about that? It's such a dignified and a powerful place to be. And yet, there we are. There we are. Because we still, all of us, it bubbles up in us. I want to conclude by reading something, and you know, how many books have been written about religion, spirituality, or death and dying? Trillions of them. And I've only read a couple. But for those of us here, this curiosity and the surrender to it, the willingness to be in the question, is articulated powerfully, elegantly, and beautifully in a book that was not written by Deepak Chopra or Wayne Dyer. But it is Bambi by Felix Salten. And has anybody ever read the book, not the Disney movie? Of course Susie has. But I'm going to read you a chapter from Bambi, which is subtitled A Life in the Woods. And this takes 5 minutes. It's not endless. But this addresses, I think, beautifully the question and one's ability to stay in it about dying. Chapter 8. The leaves were falling from the great oak at the meadow's edge. They were falling from all the trees. One branch of the oak reached high above the others and stretched far out over the meadow, and two leaves clung to its very tip. This is not the way it used to be, said one leaf to the other. No, the other leaf answered, so many of us have fallen off tonight. We're almost the only ones left on our branch. You never know who's going to go next, said the first leaf. Even when it was warm and the sun shone, a storm or a cloudburst would come sometimes, and many leaves would be torn off, though they were still young. You never know who's going to go next. The sun seldom shines now, sighed the second leaf, and when it does, it gives no warmth. We must have warmth again. Can it be true, said the first leaf, can it really be true that others come to take our places when we're gone, and after them still others and more and more? It is really true, whispered the second leaf. We can't even begin to imagine it. It's beyond our powers. Well, that makes me very sad, added the first leaf. And they were silent for a while. Then the first leaf said quietly to herself, why must we fall? The second leaf asked, what happens to us when we have fallen? We sink down. What is under us? I don't know. Some say one thing, some say another, but nobody knows. Do we feel anything? Do we know anything about ourselves when we're down there? Who knows? Not one of all those down there has ever come back to tell us about it. They were silent again. The first leaf said tenderly to the other, don't worry so much about it. You're trembling. Oh, that's nothing, said the second leaf. I tremble at the least thing now. I don't feel so sure of my hold as I used to. Well, then let's not talk about such things anymore. No, we'll let it be. But what else shall we talk about? She was silent, but went on after a pause. Which one of us will go first? Well, there's still plenty of time to worry about that, the other leaf assured her. Let's remember how beautiful it was, how wonderful when the sun came out and shone so warmly that we thought we'd burst with life. Do you remember that? And the morning dew? And the mild and splendid nights? Ugh, now the nights are dreadful, the second leaf complained, and there's no end to them. We shouldn't complain. We've outlived many, many others. Have I changed much? Asked the second leaf, shyly but determinedly. Oh, not in the least, the first leaf assured her. You only think so because you've gotten to be so yellow. But it's different in your case. You're fooling me. No, really, the first leaf exclaimed eagerly. Believe me, you're as lovely as the day you were born. Here and there, you may have a little yellow spot, but it's hardly noticeable, and it makes you only handsomer, believe me. Thanks, whispered the second leaf, quite touched. I don't believe you, not altogether, but I thank you. Because you are so kind. You've always been so kind to me. I'm just beginning to understand how kind you are. Hush, says the other leaf, and kept silent herself, for she too was troubled and did not want to speak anymore. And then they were both silent, and hours passed. A moist wind blew, cold and hostile, through the treetops. Ah, now, said the second leaf, I... Then her voice broke off, and she was torn from her place and spun down and down and down. And winter had come. I invite you to close your eyes. Let's conclude with prayer. Knowing that no matter what the imagery or the opportunity or the event would be that there are transitions for all of us in every form of life, and they are all natural, and they are all easy, and they are all in their way quite beautiful. If you've had the opportunity to be with one you love at the time of their passing, you know it is a pearl of great price, and there is no thing to fear, but a state to relax into, to let go, and truly be at one with the way. But for those of us that are here, the question does remain, what will you do with that one wild and precious life you have been given? For there is much joy and beauty yet to behold. Life is good. And all is well. So it is. Amen.